eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED lights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
This is the Ed Milet Show.
Okay, guys, welcome back to the show. You know, the reason I do this show, and by the way, it's precious to me because we only do one a week. We're the number one show in the world, and that is not easy to do when you do one a week and you're sort of ranked up against shows that come out every day or 3 or 4 days a week. And so that seat that this man is sitting in means the world to me because I only get to share one person a week with each of you. And so I take it as a great responsibility to make this time we have together every week so profound and so valuable in your lives. And I know so many of you get value out of it, and that's why you share the show. So I wanted to thank you. Today in particular is really an honor for me because I'm going to introduce somebody to you that some of you will know, but many of you will not know. And I wanted him on the show today solely because of how good his work is, how solid his content is in helping people change their lives and perform at a higher level. I'd call him like a peak performance expert. There's all kinds of different terms I could come up to describe this man, but he's got a book called The Breakthrough Code that is outstanding, and I like the way it's written. He was a Wall Street guy for a while, then went to work to train in Tony Robbins' companies. He's been training top athletes and corporations for many years, and he's just great at changing people's lives. And so, Tom McCarthy, welcome to the show today.
Yeah, it's an honor to be with you, Ed, and I'm just amazed at what you've done in such a short period of time, man. It's incredible.
Well, thank you. Well, yeah. You help people do that in their own lives. You help people do great things in their lives, and sometimes in short periods of time. So let's talk about this a little bit. There's all these things I want to get into with you because your work is unique. It's different. But you talk a lot about reality and the story somebody tells themselves as well, right? That there's this sort of story we tell ourselves and we sort of build our own reality to some extent, or the reality our parents give us or society gives us. So just your thoughts on that overall. I love the way you phrase and word this.
Yeah. So this is fun to talk with you about it because I know your work is all about this too. Mm-hmm. But what is reality? Like, you know, people say I'm a realist. What does that really mean? Mm-hmm. And I think every single day we wake up, there's a set of possibilities that are more likely to happen just based upon who we've been up till then and now. But then there's also these other possibilities that are really cool that we could make happen. And mm-hmm. So what I really love is helping people shift reality. And we were talking about a quote I have that the average person is going to conform just whatever everyone else is doing. They get sick, they go to the internet, they look up, okay, what's my prognosis? And they'll pretty much go along with that. Hmm. 7 years ago, I got chronic fatigue. And I remember a doctor saying, you know, it takes years and years. And I go to alternative doctors and some people never get over it. I'm like, screw that. Like, I'm getting over this thing quick. Yeah. So I went to the internet and I found a guy that got over it really quick. Mm-hmm. And he was in London and I connected with him. And I was able to shift my reality from having this, you know, not a death sentence, but a long time with this condition to getting over it relatively quickly. Hmm. And greatness, the second part of the quote, so average conforms reality, greatness expands reality or creates a whole new reality. Hmm. A great example recently, I think, is in Ukraine with President Zelensky there. Hmm. What was the most likely thing that was going to happen when the Russian army attacks a smaller country, right? You surrender, you give up. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we said, we'll fly out. Yeah, right. He goes, I don't need a ride. He goes, I need bullets.
Right, right.
And he shifted reality. Like you and I and all of us were rooting for him, right? Mm-hmm. Because he shifted reality in the face of just conforming. He said, no, I'm not going to do that. And it was an uphill battle. And we still don't know how it's going to end. But I love it when people do that.
It's interesting that you say that. I want to just say something about that. Yeah. I have something that I say often that I think conformity is a form of cowardice. And it's interesting that you use that example because I think one of the easiest things in life to do is just conform. Yeah. The other thing about the internet and you solving your disease too, and I'll let you speak to it, but, or, you know, this diagnosis you had is the culture is going to push you to the average,
yes,
the average diagnosis, right? The average doctor, the average performance, what the average person thinks. And unknowingly, if we're not careful about how culture or the people around us push us, we just end up moving towards the average. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. And even peak performers, I coached an athlete and I know you coach a lot of athletes, but this one athlete was a Richard Marriott's daughter and she was training for, it was kind of a form of water skiing, but they do these big jumps and this, it wasn't a typical water ski. It had like this extension and a fin. So it would like raise up above the water. She was number two in the world and she was getting ready for the world championships. And the family called me up and said, can you help her out? Cause mostly I work with corporations and I don't do a lot of athletes. I've worked with some gold medalists, but it's not really things that I'm pushing, but they called me up and they said, can you work with her? And I said, you know, I don't know anything about that sport, but I can work with her mindset. And I came in and I said, you know, hey, what's going on? And she said, nothing's working. You know, she had the story in her head, which we'll talk about later. And I said, what do you mean? She goes, well, I'm ranked number two, but, and she said, I'll never beat the number one person in the sport. That's the Michael Jordan of our sport. So she already had a limitation there. So her average was not, you know, the typical average, but still she was averaging in. And then she said, the people that I normally beat, they're beating me. I'm finishing like fifth and sixth and seventh. And I said, well, what's happening? She says, well, I get there, I'm just so nervous, right? And I don't want them to call my name. And literally she was averaging down, even though she was like a peak performer. So I think, you know, your book, I love the title of your book, right? You know, about, you know, the power of one more, right? Yeah. Because even when we get to these levels that you're at, that I'm at, that other people are at, we still potentially can average out versus continuing pushing forward.
By the way, so true. We're gonna talk about this in a minute, but it's for me, I'm really conscious of the story I'm telling myself all the time. I think the stories we tell ourselves really dictate our life. And the higher you climb, the more incumbent it is upon you to create a new story. It's easy to start patting yourself on the back too, or start talking about your old story. This is what I used to do.
Yeah.
But for you, I think it's important to get context because I'm looking at your work because, you know, a lot of people submit to come on the show and I'm like, well, how do I, you know, for me, when I delineate, I'm like, okay, is this work unique? Will it be profound? Will my audience be changed by it? And two things. One, your work moved me. Two, your story moved me. You could have easily, as a young man, used the story of your upbringing, which is a real one, to go in a particular direction. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people are like, yeah, I have this thing about story you guys are going to get into. That's great. But I actually have a real story. You know, and they think this in their mind. Well, my story is my parents got divorced, or Ed's story is his dad's an alcoholic. Your story is really interesting because, you know, you're this little boy. I'll let you tell it. But when I'm watching you work, I watch some of your talks and I get emotional with humans because I love humans. But I pictured this little boy. Mm-hmm. I pictured you as the, I think, 3 or 4 year old little boy.
Yeah.
So tell my audience about where your story began. I don't usually do this on the show. I usually get into the work. But I think your story is so fascinating to me. And I just said this part, I think, is just honor your dad, who you didn't get to know very well also. So just share with them that part of the story.
Yeah, I grew up in a military family. My dad went to West Point, young Army officer. I was the firstborn. We lived at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and he got sent to Vietnam in 1963. So early in the war, before there was a lot of U.S. troops over there. And I had a brother 1 year younger that was already born when my dad left, and then a brother that was born while my dad was over here that never that didn't meet my dad before he was over. And I still remember. So there's three of us. My mom, you know, they're taking care of us. And I remember waking up one morning, and my dad was going to come home in like a month, right? So it was almost time for my dad to come home. And I know we were talking about it in the family, and I remember looking out the window, and a taxi cab pulled up, and Army officer got out. I'm thinking it's my dad. I'm all excited. My mom obviously knew what was happening. And so she made us stay in the room and went down. And you know, I hear like a scream. And then all of a sudden, people are coming into our house, neighbors. And, you know, I'm getting a little emotional thinking about it. But when you have something like that happen, and everybody has something in their life like this, but when you have something like that happen, particularly when you're young, life is not black and white anymore. You know, you don't have a stable foundation like I thought I was going to have. Mm-hmm. And so it made me search. It made me want to grow. It's actually a gift. It was a hard gift. Mm-hmm. And I know you write and talk a lot about this too, but I look back now, it made me who I am, right? It made me more curious. Mm-hmm. I don't know who I would have been had my I mean, listen, I wish my dad would have come back because my dad was this amazing man that everybody loved.
By the way, everyone, his father was killed in Vietnam.
Yeah, my dad was killed in Vietnam, one of the probably the 100th person U.S. soldier killed there, so very early. But there was a lot of pain. There was a lot of grief, sadness, uncertainty, lack of confidence. My mom never fully recovered, unfortunately.
Your mother never remarried, right?
She never remarried. She had three little boys. She committed her life to us. And I think when we got out and started doing things, I think it was almost like her purpose on this planet was done. She retired it. She was a nurse. She went back to work, but passed away relatively young, like 67 years old. But that sadness, that grief was with her that whole time. And I'm sure, like, you know, and I know you talk about this, we inherit in those first 7 years a lot of our parents' beliefs. So I had to get over all that stuff.
Yeah.
And really start to carve out who I wanted to be once I saw that we have the possibility not to just live up to our past, but far exceed what velocity or path that our past was going to take us on.
I'm really glad that you shared that. I want to talk about how you did it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard some different things in my life. You know, I do a lot of work with the conscious and the subconscious mind.
Yeah, me too. I love it.
But you really do. And I want to know if that was part of your work. You call it the super conscious, and I've never heard this before, but I'd like you to share with them. So how did you start to tell this new story? I picture this little boy, you lose your dad, you're the oldest boy. There's just got to be this anxiety, this fear. We do adapt our parents' emotions. I believe we accept some of those emotions from our parents that we see them living with, whether it's just even being melancholy or down or just or the absence of bliss.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The absence of something is it's like the invisible emotions we don't pick up.
There was not a lot of bliss in our house growing up. Yeah, unfortunately.
I imagine. Yeah, I imagine. Yet, I think those things typically become gifts because that allows you to connect with people.
Mm-hmm.
I've had someone on my show recently say this, but I've said it for a long time, that I think we are most qualified and equipped to help the person we used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people are struggling with grief or anxiety or fear. And I really do believe that if you come from an environment like that, that that is a gift to help you connect with someone like that you used to be. But talk a little bit about how you've programmed your mind.
Yeah.
And what you do with the subconscious mind. And I didn't know this, frankly, the data about the different bits of information that the subconscious can hold compared to the conscious mind.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a process. I don't know how the heck I even got my mom, to her credit, she was a really, really amazing mom. She loved us. She just she had limitations, right? In her thinking because of this tragedy and her parents had been divorced and her dad was an alcoholic, so there were some things there, but she was really a really incredible mom, and she started thinking beyond the norm, and so, you know, there was little books on healing and energy healing and things like that that I would pick up, and I thought it was really weird at first, like, Mom, what the heck's wrong with you? And then I got curious, and I started reading, I don't know if you read the book, Illusions, way back when.
Yeah.
And that book pissed me off because the guy dies and they're like, what?
Yes, you know?
But then it made me think, right? And then I was reading Wayne Dyer's books at a much younger age than most people because of the pain, right? And me wanting to grow out of it. So it was a huge gift. And the conscious mind is what most people think they have, right? You know, this thing I'm thinking with, I'm observing with, I'm making decisions with. And you're right, right? You know, we have a conscious mind. It processes 40 bits of information per second. That's pretty cool.
Yep.
But down below, the subconscious, I call it the superconscious because it's a million times more powerful. Yeah. We've got this part of our mind that can process 40 million bits of information per second. And I believe the mind actually extends outside of the body. I don't believe it's like located in the body. I believe the mind, like you probably have had this happen dozens of times where you're thinking of somebody and then all of a sudden they call you up like, well, how the heck did that happen? And someone you haven't heard from in 2 or 3 months.
Yep.
Like, where did that come from? Mm-hmm. Like, we take for granted that we can get on a cell phone and call somebody, but also our energy, right? All we are is energy.
Mm-hmm.
Energy follows thought. You think of somebody, energy is going out. Your mind is sending that out. It's extending beyond your body.
Mm.
And I've got some really cool story I'll tell you about my son later on that too. But
tell me now. I want to hear it.
So my son was an athlete and he played college basketball. He got hurt 1 year, had a concussion. He's playing at Harvard. So he had a fifth year. And so he goes to a school called Rice to play his fifth year.
Yeah.
And he's not feeling good. His hip's hurting. His knees hurting, and then his back goes out. He's like a 23-year-old kid. They take him in. They tell him, you know, you've got the largest herniated disc we've ever seen in a kid your age. You know, we're going to have to inject you. So they put him under, inject him, and it didn't work. And I told him, I said, look, a lot of pain in your body is mind-body pain. It's repressing emotions, not letting them flow through, you know, being a perfectionist, people pleaser, anger, a lot of the ones I've had over my life that I've had to get beyond. And I said, read this book, The Mind-Body Prescription by Dr. John Sarno. He listened to it three times. They wanted to get him back in, talk about surgery, everything else. His pain went away. And it's never returned since. So he's a big believer in the mind. So anyways, it takes me to this story. He was working on a deal to buy a company. He doesn't want me to tell the name of the company, but it's a company everyone would recognize. And he had some senior partners. And so they're going to buy this company. And they're raising some capital to do the transaction. And I told my son, I said, look, program your mind, your superconscious mind, that you're always in the right place at the right time. Mm-hmm. And he's a big believer in the mind. So he did it, right? Yeah. He didn't say, no, that's not going to work. He did it. He calls me up a week later. He goes, Dad, you're never going to believe what happened. I'm like, what? He said, well, I'm walking down the street. He lives in West Hollywood. Mm-hmm. This guy's jogging towards me. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, this guy stops right in front of me. And he goes, the guy told him, he goes, I don't know why I'm stopping right in front of you, but something tells me I need to talk to you. So they get in this conversation. Yeah. And my son didn't learn a lot about him, but the guy, you know, he asked my son, what are you doing? He goes, you know, my son said, I'm an investor. He goes, look, if we ever need to talk, let me know. He gave him some information. My son goes back and looks him up. The guy's a billionaire, and he also runs a $4 billion private equity fund. they have lunch a few days later, and then they have dinner a couple days later, and the guy ends up, unfortunately, the deal didn't go through, but the guy ends up committing like $100 million to the deal and brings in a friend that commits $100 million.
Crazy.
Being in the right place at the right time. Now, how did that happen? Like, was that just coincidence?
On a spinning earth,
yeah.
On all the streets of all the humans, they run into each other.
And the guy said, I never even run this way, right? You know, he goes, I don't even know why I'm stopping.
Yeah.
So I think, and listen, is that going to happen? I'm always in the right place at the right time. All right, where's my opportunity? It doesn't happen like that. You and I know. That's what everyone wants.
Yes.
But it does happen. And we have so many of these instances. And with your work and what I'm trying to help people do, we can help people create more of these great shifts in reality.
You're right down the alley I wanted to go in this interview. So I want to stay on superconscious mind and energy just for a little bit. Stay on that zone because you have a bunch of other stuff I want to get into as well. About practical application. So how does one begin to program their sub or superconscious mind? What does that look like? Is it repetitive thought? Is it writing things down? Do you believe in visualizations? What would be a strategy you would give everybody here to say, this is a step to begin to program this part of your brain that's a million times more powerful than your conscious mind?
Yeah. Yeah. First thing you've got to do is you've got to get into a relaxed state, an alpha brainwave state, which is almost a meditative state, but you can get there really quickly. Like literally you can just look up, like if you look up, like keep your head facing forward, but you just raise your eyes up, that'll put you into an alpha state fairly quickly. And but you can't, the way that most people try to do it in the past when I'm older than you, but you might have seen this too, as they said, affirmations, and you would say these affirmations, but there would be no emotion involved with it. There's no real energy. And then they go, it didn't work. Well, of course it didn't work. Like if you say something like, I'm always in the right place at the right time, like that did nothing to my superconscious mind. So what is the superconscious looking for? It's looking for pictures. It's looking for feelings, right? And so one of the habits, I've got three big ideas in the book. The first one is focus on less and then obsess. But the obsessed part is not every single second I've got to be thinking about it. That's actually detrimental because it means you're not trusting the superconscious in the process.
Okay.
And I think a couple times a day, you've got to work with your superconscious, get in a relaxed state. Best times are right when you wake up, right? You're already relaxed, right before you go to bed, maybe another time during the day, a few minutes. But you've got to, and again, this is stuff I'm sure they've heard a million times from you because I know that you do it too. But you've got to see it, you've got to feel it, and you've got to believe it, and then you can let it go. Now, we need repetition. I'm not saying do it once and that's all you do, but a couple times a day is fine. It's not like every single minute. If you want to do it more, that's fine. If you do it more, do it not out of fear. Oh my God, I better do it again. So do it out of just confidence, do it out of joy, do it out of fun. And the superconscious will start to accept that.
Yes.
Now, there is another thing that people have to do, though, and again, this is part of what you talk about, too. You do have to let go of old baggage, because when we're trying to put new great stuff into our mind, but we put it on a crappy foundation, mm-hmm. it's not as powerful.
How does one do that?
Let go of old baggage?
Yeah.
Lots of ways. I just did on Instagram, I did 7 different ways you could do it. Okay. But you know, there's a lot of energy psychology techniques you can use. The one that I have in the book, it's just a total mind game.
Where I'm going.
But I call it the shredder. And so you picture, and people might think this is silly. This
it's
is
not.
Crazy.
Nothing.
But life is a mind game. Yes. Life is a mind game. What you think your life is a total mind game you're playing yourself.
Yep.
So if a memory keeps coming up and keeps bugging you and makes you feel less confident than you want, like rather than just let that rattle around in your head, let's do something with it.
Yep.
Let's teach the mind we don't want it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so the shredder, you literally just picture a paper shredder, you know, all those shredders. So you literally just picture a paper shredder and imagine this event, right, where maybe you failed or you got embarrassed or you couldn't figure something out or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And just run it mentally in your imagination, totally in your imagination, run it through the shredder.
Yes.
And then run it through like 3 or 4 times. And now the mind goes, because remember, it likes pictures and feelings.
Yep.
Now the mind goes, oh, you don't want us to bring that up anymore.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, everybody, I want to go back. So all of this is gold. Tom, it's more gold than you realize it is because you teach it every day. Okay, so I want to go back. Number one, this shredder concept. People can go back and listen to old stuff I have. I talk about how you're picturing it and it's like a CD, like a DVD. And if you ever had a DVD skip and you can't watch it anymore, but if you're old enough to remember DVDs, right? I used to say, scratch it. And it literally will scratch it where I can't play the damn DVD of this video anymore. You're putting it into a shredder.
Yeah.
This is incredibly important stuff, guys, to reprogram the way you think. And again, it's not that sophisticated. It's just a matter of doing it repetitiously on a regular basis. So whether it's shredder or scratching the old DVD, or you can picture if you're watching Netflix, your internet breaks down and it gets all scrambled. Just picture it getting scrambled. Picture it getting scrambled. This tells your mind you don't want it anymore. So that's really, really important. The other thing you can do is you can play goofy music over it.
Yeah.
You start watching this stupid video of this thing you're afraid of, and you start going, dun, 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 dun. I used to play the theme song from Sanford and Son. Now I'm really dating myself. You and I know the show. Everybody else, go Google it right now. But I would watch these videos of things I feared, and I go, dun, 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 dun. Right? But it scrambles. It tells the mind, don't pull this file up anymore. So that's huge, you guys. Shredder, DVD, internet breaks down, funny music over it. The second thing he said that I want to go back and just reinforce is that when you are programming your mind, typically for most people, there's visual, the feeling, kinesthetic, and then auditory, okay? Affirmations are the least effective for most people because it's auditory, and your body rejects it when you say it. They don't believe it, so your body doesn't feel it. I'm a winner. I'm a winner. But if you don't believe that, your body rejects it. It doesn't feel it. It can't see it. So this is important. The most powerful is a visual picture. And then if you can give yourself the gift of what it would feel like to be in that moment and you feel it in your body, part of your subconscious mind is located in your body. Tom's work says it's not just located there. But when you feel something, your body begins to own it. That's why, for example, there's triggers in your life, and then we'll move on to the next thing. But I just want to give everybody the gift of this. This is why I wanted you here today, is us going back and forth on this stuff, because I think we're 2 of the best on the planet about it. You ever had food poisoning before? I got food poisoning like 3 years ago on a tuna melt. And I love tuna, right? But I like it's protein. It's one. I cannot smell a tuna melt now. Just the smell of one, it gets you sick again. Why? Because it gave me all three. It gave me the visual of the sandwich, the feeling of being sick, right? And then obviously what I was saying when I was being sick, that trilogy, all I got to do is see one and I go into that state. So this is how we program our mind. You already do it, folks. It's a matter of taking control of it and doing it repetitiously. Okay. By the way, last thing, the gaze, where he said how to get into your subconscious mind. I'll often teach my athletes, even in the middle of a game, when they're in a big crowd, gaze off into the distance at nothing. It puts you into that state. And now you're in you can get into your mind. Okay. So all huge stuff right
Great
there.
Stuff,
I'm hearing everybody write stuff down. I want to go back to big idea number one, because I just want to make sure we've exhausted the thought on it. I wrote it down here. This is one of the things I want to ask you about. Focus on less than obsess. Now, you said earlier, you said a few minutes ago, that doesn't mean do it all the time, but Do you mean as an overall life strategy as well? Do you think people are doing too many things, or do you mean that just in the sense of programming one's mind?
Are you a great, I know you're a very good golfer. Are you a great dancer?
No.
Okay. Do you want to be?
I could care less.
Yeah. So you're not focused on that. So there's lots of things that we do. And, but you know, occasionally you're going to go and dance. I haven't danced in a long time.
Right. But I did in college, everybody. Don't go to YouTube. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. But my point is, because the book is called The Breakthrough Code. Like where you want to have a breakthrough, like a really dramatic, exciting breakthrough. Mm-hmm. You're not going to have 50 of them in over the course of the next week. You're going to have to apply some focus. And you know, what's the difference between a light bulb and a laser? Mm-hmm. Just focus, right? A light bulb will light up a room. A laser will cut through something. So you've got to laser in on the breakthrough. The subtitle of my book is Living a Life Without Limits, right? I don't like limits. Mm-hmm. I don't like people saying you can't do this or this can't be done. I just, that pisses me off, and it motivates the heck. I'm sure it motivates you too, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and so, but to really get the power to create a breakthrough in an area, maybe it's your health, maybe it's financially or in your business or in a relationship, you got to focus in.
Yeah.
And you've got to make it a priority, and that's all I'm talking about. You've got to tell the mind, look, I know you got a lot going on, but this is really important. And I think you can have maybe three of those going at any point in time.
Totally agree with you, by the way. I think you got to pick an area and laser in on it, to use your terminology. Why? It's connected to the second thing we're going to talk about, which is energy. When you're focused on a lot of different things, you've depleted the energy, right? And you say in the book, you say, or in one of the talks too, is that Einstein says everything is energy. Yep. Not some things.
Yeah.
Everything is energy. Driving here to do the interview today, I've had a little bit of rest lately. And I knew today was going to be awesome because I was coming in, I'm like, I'm vibrating at a high frequency today. Yep. I know what it feels like to be vibrating at a high enough frequency where I'm going to produce a great result. And I know what it feels like oftentimes where I am not. And the last few weeks, frankly, just between my new TV show on Nosy, everybody, go see it on Nosy, starts August 22nd. The different things I've had in my life, my new book, all this other stuff, I've just not been vibrating at quite the energy level that I know is the success level that I need to be at. So talk a little bit about this. You said something in this I've never heard someone say about cells and volts of energy. And like you can actually prove almost with neuroscience or chemistry or math why this is actually true. So let's go to the energy thing for a second and how one might direct it.
Yeah, so everything is energy, and not just us, right? You know, the cells and atoms and in our body, but everything. Like this table that it's just condensed energy, this table right in front of us here. Everything's energy, and everything's created twice. First inside, then outside, right? This table was an idea in somebody's head at one point in time. Yeah. And then they, you know, through work, they formed energy, and now we've got a table that we can put our hands on and microphones and everything. So, everything's energy, and Einstein also, he was a big believer in the imagination, and that energy follows thought. And so when we think a thought, energy follows that. Mm. When the president of the Ukraine was thinking, hey, we need help here, like energy was behind that thought, and that thought came to you. You heard it, and I heard it, and all of a sudden, like we're rooting for them, right? Mm. We're rallying for them. So when you understand here, the challenge I think most people have at is they live so firmly planted in this physical world of the only thing that exists is what I can touch, what I can see, what I can feel. But everything's created twice. Mm-hmm. So there's things you can't touch, see, and feel that are being created now. They're not in physical reality yet. They're in the non-physical. But that's where all the greatness starts. Mm. And when someone's struggling, all they can see is what is already there for them, and they get stuck, and then they conform. What I think we as human beings ideally should do, and this is hard because it's fun to live in the physical world. I mean, you got all these great houses, you know, I have different toys and fun things, and it's fun, and that's why we're here. So I like doing that, but we also have to have ideally a foot in the non-physical where there are no boundaries and where energy is waiting. It's just literally saying, what do you want, Ed? What do you want? Like everything you have, you're telling me about your, you know, beautiful homes. Those all came from first you directing energy inside you to go out and make those opportunities real.
Okay, brother. No one's ever said that on the show before. And it's so true. One, I talk a lot about, I think 99% of people operate out of a pattern of thinking that is history and memory. 1% of humans have worked to the extent that they operate out of imagination and vision. They actually have that as their operating platform. The people that I naturally enjoy their energy, to quote you, are people who operate out of imagination. And by the way, you can just take an inventory of yourself and the people around you. How many of your conversations, your thoughts are about imagining and visioning, and how many of them are about history and memory? And in my life, I've just sort of, as I've gotten older, gravitated. But I'm telling you, almost everything I accomplish or that I do, I consciously begin to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So out of the physical.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard someone phrase it that way before. It's exactly what I do. I'm working on a few things right now. My mm-hmm. process, unconsciously, mm-hmm. now that I'm 51 years old and has mm-hmm. repeated it over 30 years, my process is to actually sit, get in a quiet meditative state to some extent. And I'm talking about holding my hands and praying.
Yeah.
I'm talking about just getting alone almost yeah. for me is that yeah. state. And it is to have a thought, and then I am actually literally intentionally pouring energy into the thought.
Yeah.
I'm trying to pour more and more and more energy yeah. into the thought. And then I actually separate from it and I get away from it for a while.
Yeah.
And I let it just sit with its energy. And then I pour more and more and more energy into that vision and that imagination. And it amazes me how the world begins to conspire to help me make it true.
Yes.
Whether it's that running on the street
yeah.
or a conversation today or something I then read. And I'm like, yeah. what in the, why does this pop up?
Yeah.
Right. So this is the process of yes. creativity. It's thinking and then flooding it with energy. And the more successful you become, the more you have some wins, the more you begin to understand what that feels like when you're actually doing it.
And it's liberating agree? Because now you know there's nothing that can stop you.
Right.
Yeah. And that's what most people don't have. They literally think there's lots of things out there that can stop them. And they're not willing to take that leap of faith. And you got to take the leap of faith in the beginning. Like people that are listening to this that haven't, that, you know, that are not at Ed's level yet,
mm-hmm.
just know at one point he was at your level, right? But he just outgrew that.
Of course.
And it wasn't because, you know, he or me or anyone else is better than anybody else. It's just we're using the tools that everyone's using. As a matter of fact, people that are struggling, the reason they're struggling is because their subconscious is so powerful that it's taking all this information that they've put in, that life's a struggle, life's hard, you can never get ahead, and it's making it absolutely true for them.
Yeah, so I so know that it's not that I'm different, which is why I'm in this space. I know humans can change. I yeah. know their reality can change because I'm so aware of my own limitations. I'm so aware of how many things I am either average at or sub-average at. That if I can produce certain things in my life, because this is not even humility, I just realize my own limitations in terms of my intellect or my strength or my upbringing or my experiences, that if I can produce these things in my life, I absolutely 1,000,000% sure know you listening to this or watching this can as well. And there is a process. It is both art and science. The art part, you're going to figure out as you go. The science part, which is what we're talking about today, is absolutely a replicatable process that you can start with. So let's start with a few of what those things are. I want to go back one thing because you just use a term I've not heard before, which is use your own electricity. And so what does that mean to you? Because people say energy. I think a mm-hmm. lot of people have heard the term energy before and they're like, look, I just don't get it, you know? But electricity,
yeah.
I don't think most people look at themselves as electric.
Mm.
And they are. And yeah. it's almost like, use the example of a light, everyone. God bless you. But if you really are an electrical being,
mm-hmm.
it's so sad to dim your light over time.
Great analogy. I like that.
Me too.
Yeah.
And just reading your work, and you've reduced your electrical charge. And the external evidence of that is the lights dimming in your life. The cool part is that at any given time, you can start to take control and charge of your electricity. I just like that term better than energy.
Yeah.
So are we electric actually as human beings? And maybe like one thought or concept about how one begins to up their amp level, so to speak.
Yeah. So Bruce Lipton, who you probably are familiar with, yeah. Biology Belief, he's the one that I got the data from on each cell has a certain charge. And we've got, I can't even remember since I wrote it, but we have, you know, like billions or trillions mm-hmm. of cells in our body. So yeah, we got a lot of electricity. Like we could light up a city if we used it
mm-hmm.
effectively. I really love what you just said though. Like, cause I've never thought of it like someone dimming their light, because I think that really is what's happening or what's happened to a lot of people. It's not like they don't have the charge available, but they've got it on the dimmer.
Yes.
Right. And they're just so used to having it dimmed out
mm-hmm.
that they think that's all there is. you and I, the reason we do this, and I've been doing this a long time and you know, don't necessarily have to do it anymore, but I really feel like my purpose, and I know your purpose, is to help people understand they can do so much more. And it's not about doing more. It's about really expressing themselves and living their purpose and do the work that they came here to do. And I think a lot of people have lost sight of that, or they're not even clear what that is.
Well, part of it's that story, don't you think?
Yeah.
And I think we have lots of stories we tell ourselves. Most of them we've told us ourselves so many times, and we've gathered so much evidence in our life to prove our story true that we're so buried in it that we're not even really aware that we are actually living a story we've told ourselves.
Yeah.
And if we're both right about that, and we are right about that, how does a human being begin to change the narrative of their life? Do they just sit down and say, I'm going to write a new chapter in my book and I'm a new character? Or what would you recommend somebody do to start to say, look, I do need to, I'm not even aware of all the stories I'm telling myself, but I do want to tell myself a new one. Where would they begin?
Well, the first thing is dig into the pain and let go of, start letting go of that. Like really, and that's, I mean, I'll probably do that to the day I die, right? You know, I'm not feeling good, not that motivated. I'm not just going to go, you know, I feel great. I mean, that can work short term, but I really want to go, like, what the heck's behind this? Like, what is dragging me down? What am I thinking? What's popping up? Where's that coming from? And then, you know, I shred it or whatever.
Yeah.
There's tons of different things.
I
love yours too.
Yeah.
Lots of different things you can do, but that's the first thing, is to really free up, because, and people probably can't see, but if I'm holding this bottle in my hand, and then I'm trying to put another bottle in, you know, a better bottle, like I can't do it. As a matter of fact, this is a funny little exercise. So start, take your right foot and just start doing it clockwise and just kind of spinning clockwise. Now while you're doing that, I want you to take your hand and do the letter six. So put your hand up, the letter six.
Okay.
But no, take your right hand.
Okay.
Yeah. So letter six, and is what's happening to your foot?
My foot went the other way.
Yeah, because
son,
see, your mind can only do one thing at one time.
Sucker, that just happened.
Yeah. Your foot started spinning the other way, right?
Yeah, it started going the other way.
Because your mind is like, hey, wait a minute, right? It's very powerful, but it can only really do focus on one thing at one time. So we've got to get the garbage out, the old baggage out, and it's a continual process, because stuff. It reminds me of like at college when you went to the cafeteria and you took a plate and then another plate pops up. Remember that?
Yes.
Like, yeah. And that's what's going to happen in your life. So you're never going to be done. Like, you know, people look at, oh, my God, Ed's so successful. He's so amazing. Hey, he's still working on himself, I bet. I know I am.
100%.
And I'm older than you.
Yeah.
So
it's really good to have someone on the show older than me, bud. That was awesome. So good to have.
Yeah.
What about old patterns? So you got a story and then you got patterns, right?
Yeah.
And I have friends, I know you do this, one of the downsides, if you're a movie, I have movie producer friends, and one of the things that just sucks for them is they can't watch a movie the same way anymore.
Yeah.
Because they're like, the editing this, the lighting that, they can't actually enjoy the movie, right?
Yeah.
And for me and you, because we're in sort of the part of what we both do is the human behavior business, sometimes it's hard for me, even with my friends, to watch them because I'm like, they're doing their pattern thing right now, you know, because I notice patterns in people. Yet most people are oblivious of their pattern. So you have a pattern of thinking, you have a pattern of emotions, you have the story you're telling yourself, but just discuss a little bit like old patterns and replacing those patterns and how important that is in our life, because this pattern produces the emotion, produces a behavior, produces a result, and it just kind of keeps happening over and over again with our patterns.
Yeah. A couple things pop in my mind. Like the pattern that got me in trouble with chronic fatigue was like not resting and thinking I always need to be on, always have my mind working. I was traveling all over the world, not sleeping. I had to change that pattern, right? That pattern would have, I mean, the chronic fatigue was a gift. It was terrible. And I felt like a 95-year-old man, but it was a real gift for me, but I had to shift that pattern. It wasn't just taking a medication. It wasn't just, you know, I mean, I did all sorts of alternative things, but what I really found that worked from this guy that got over it quick, I had to basically reset my amygdala. You know, I was in fight or flight like all the time. I had that pattern. I had to fix that pattern. Then my health returned. When I was working with the water skier, going back to that story. So she said, you know, this person could never be beat. I'm really struggling. I'm really nervous. When I get there, I don't want to go. When I look at the back of the boat, I look at the judges and I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm going to make a huge mistake. And this, she was ranked number two in the world. Wow. But we got rid of that stuff, all those old memories, shredded that, got rid of that. And then I said, all right, if you, because the world championships she was getting ready for, I said, if you could have anything happen in the world championships, what would you want? What do you think she said?
I hope she said she wanted to win a gold medal.
I thought she was going to say that, but she didn't say that. She said something actually even cooler. She said, you know what? I want to nail my routine. I'm working on this routine. I want to nail it. And whatever happens, if I nail it, that's all I need to do. Mm-hmm. I said, I like that.
And
I said,
inner control.
Yeah. And this is what you do. And so then you work backwards, right? That's the result you want. Mm-hmm. And I don't even say goal. Goals to me, like when I think of goals, it's like, oh, this goal I want. I might get there. Result is like, you got it. It's nailed. So I said, what result do you want? And she said, I want to nail my routine. I said, all right. If you knew you were going to nail your routine, what would you be thinking when you were waiting there for them to call your name? She said, oh, I'd be thinking, let's go, baby.
Yeah.
Call my name. Yeah. You know, call my name. Call my name.
Yeah.
I forgot who's saying that. And I said, when you get in the water and you look at the judges on the back of the boat, what would you be thinking? Yeah. If you knew you were going to nail it, like if you're absolutely certain you're going to nail it. She said, well, I'd look at them and I'd be thinking, you're in for a treat. I said, don't say that out loud, but I like that. Mm-hmm. And she had like a series of things, a new story that she was going to tell herself. I remember leaving, though, and this is interesting because this is what happens with pretty much everybody. I remember leaving there, and she had come up with this great story, and she was so excited about it. I'm getting ready to leave. She goes, stop, stop. I said, what? Mm. She goes, it doesn't feel real. Mm. I go, of course not. Right. You just came up with it.
Yeah.
I said, so what you have to do is every practice with your coach, imagine it's the world championships, and even have your coach go, you know, Sandy, you're up next, and feel that, right? You know, yeah, it's my turn. Let's go. Get in the boat. Get in the water. Hold the whatever thing you hold, like the tow rope, right? And look at the empty boat, or maybe it's just your coach, but imagine those judges there and look at them and say, you're in for a treat today. I got this. And she did, you know, over time. And I worked with her one more time. Mm-hmm. She goes into the world championships with this incredible story, and she finishes eighth. I'm just kidding. That would be a terrible story. That's not true.
I'm like, what?
Yeah, no. She, you know, get out of the studio right now, he's going to say.
This guy's good. Hey, all right.
She won the world championship.
That's freaking awesome.
And she beat this person that had never been beaten before. But not only that, because sometimes someone can have a bad day, she set the world record.
Oh, my gosh.
And then she came back the next year just to prove it wasn't a fluke and won again.
Oh, that's so good.
But and that wasn't me. That was just her changing her story.
Yeah, that's awesome.
When you help someone, it's not you. I didn't do anything.
Of course.
I just helped you kind of figure out what your story needs to be.
100%. And you said something so huge there, which is that when you first begin this picture or a new story, I don't believe it's real. It's not supposed to. But eventually, stay with this, everybody. This is why you have to keep doing it. Eventually, our minds always move towards what it's familiar with. Mm. So right now, you keep moving towards your old story because it's so familiar. So the first time you tell the new story, it doesn't feel real. The second time, the third time. But somewhere along the line, all of a sudden, it feels 40% real. Then it feels 70% real. And then eventually, like any thought you've ever had, it eventually becomes familiar to you.
Yep.
And familiarity is where our mind is going to move. And so if you continue to repeat that story to yourself, there will be a point where it is real. And then you begin to gather evidence from your life. Oh, this is right. This happened. This happened. This happened. And then you become superhuman in regards to that one vision you have for your life. So you'll always move towards what you're most familiar with. That's why that's why most people quit on it. It didn't work. I tried your thing. I tried that thing for like how long? Well, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Really? 2 weeks? How many times do you do it? Three.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. Come see me in 9 months. Come see me in 18 months. See me in 24 months. When not only your subconscious is doing it, but now your conscious is picking up actual evidence of your life that this is true. And eventually it does become who you are. By the way, that's how you got where you are now.
That's right.
You are where you are now because at first it was just some stupid thought you had, but then you had it again, and then you had it again, and then you had it again, and then you proved it, and then you proved it again, and then you had it again. And now you're familiar with it. And you live it. And so that's how you change it as well. Now there are things you can do immediately that we're going to talk about in a second. Okay. Next thing that I love that you write about. This is so good, by the way, brother. I told you we're going to go a certain amount of time. We're probably going to go a little bit longer because it's so good. Identity. We both talk about identity a great deal. And I think it's almost invisible to most people. So, you know, when you really listen to someone or you watch them, you can begin to hear their identity. I'm working with a couple new athletes right now, and people ask me all the time, what do you work with when you're with athletes? Or what do you work with when you're with a CEO of a company or an entertainer or whatever? It might be say my name, which I think might be Beyonce. I'm not completely right. Am I right about that?
Probably, yeah.
I am right about that. The fact that I know that is pretty bizarre. And if I'm wrong, it's close enough, everybody. But it was rattling in my head.
Yeah.
So anyway, I might be right. It's close. But what I work with, usually when I'm talking with athletes or working with them, there's all kinds of different techniques. But at the end of the day, if I distilled it down, it's both their confidence and their identity.
Mm-hmm.
At the top levels, people still struggle with confidence. When you see an athlete go in a slump, is that they don't know how to hit anymore?
Yeah.
No. A couple negative results happened. They started to move towards that story.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, they're lacking confidence. And so if you have to work on your self-confidence or your identity, welcome to being a human. And I'm talking about people that have led big countries,
yes,
run big companies, are the top athletes in the world. I think a lot of people think, well, I struggle with my confidence, so I'm not like these other people. It's natural to them. Yeah, right. Until they have a big setback. And then it's not so natural.
Yeah.
Or they just have this amazing identity. And they just have more. Until they don't anymore. Until the success is stripped of them. So how does one begin to build a new identity, and how important is it?
It's everything. You know, your identity is your most critical story that's inside of you that shapes everything you see. Like, we think we see the world with our eyes, right? We think we hear things with our ears, but you really don't. You hear with your story, right? You see with your story. And identity is like your truest, most precious part of your story, the one that you're going to like stand up for day after day. And a lot of people do have identities that are not supporting them. You know, they have identities or belief systems around, like, I've written a couple books on speaking, public speaking, right? I've been speaking all around the world for years and years and years. And so we'll train somebody and they'll go, you know, I always get nervous right before I speak. And what I try and do is like, that can't be the way you think about this. And they go, well, no, they get over it. And I go, yeah, but nervousness, you're either in one of two emotional states. I'm going to generalize here a little bit. When you do anything, you're either in a protective state. You're walking in, like if I come in here and I'm going, all right, I don't know this guy. What's he going to ask me? You know, I'm in a protective state. I'm not going to be as good. Words aren't going to flow. The mind's not going to work. Or I'm in a growth state, right? Like, I've already flubbed some words, made some mistakes. I don't even worry about that when I'm speaking. I don't even worry about that. I probably made like 84 mistakes already.
I don't think so.
Right? If we've been counting. Yeah. I'm just kidding. I've been counting. But it doesn't bother me, right? Because I'm not worried about that. My identity is not that I've got to be perfect every single time. My identity is just, I give everything I've got. I'm going to just pour everything I have into this and we're going to have some fun. But my identity, and I'm sure yours, has shifted a lot, you know, from childhood. I was that person that thought life was hard. I was that person that thought life wasn't freaking fair, man. How come I don't have a dad? I had to shift that. And at the core of who we are is our identity. And when you really get clear on what that is, you can, and if you don't like it, you don't have to stick with it, right? You can shift it and change it. I love what you were saying earlier. It's to me, it's like carving away at something.
Yeah.
So I don't look at it as like one and done, right? You know, I know there's some lag time, but I'm just going to carve away today, carve away, carve away, carve away. And then it does start feeling more and more real. And then you're living it.
Yeah.
And then life is so much easier because you're not even seeing the same world you used to see.
So true.
It's a completely different world you're experiencing. And that may be hard for people to imagine. Like, what do you mean it's a different world? Like, everyone sees the same thing? No, they don't.
Yeah.
I had a friend, I was in a car accident. It wasn't bad, but we were in Hawaii. This friend of mine, CEO of a company, was driving. His daughter was in the back. She was like 6 years old, and somebody hit him in from behind. So his experience was he's pissed off, like gets out, you know, he's kind of angry. And I'm sitting in the car, his daughter in the back, you know, she called me Uncle T. She goes, hey, Uncle T. She goes, can we go out and look? She goes, this is so exciting, right? You know, this is so, I've never been in an accident before. Right. So people don't see the same thing.
They do not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, brother, that is such a good example. On identity, there's little pieces of ourselves that we begin to realize. Like, I used to hear people say, I'll give you one little subtle thing that might help everybody. I was just thinking of it when you said it. Why hear, and I say this often too, like my, a lot of my, the separation is in the preparation, I say, or like, you know, a lot of my confidence comes from how prepared I am.
Yeah.
It's a real fine line with that though, because years ago, it drifted into something dangerous for me. So yeah, I do think you need to be prepared. But I think a lot of people, what holds them back is the threshold of what they think they need to know before they act.
Yeah.
You agree with that?
Absolutely.
So like they get this preparation thing conflated where they go, yeah, and so I'm just preparing.
Yeah.
And if I just knew a little bit more about it, if I was a little bit more prepared, if I had a little bit more knowledge, if I went to one more seminar, if I read one more book, if I just had one more exercise, then I'd take action. What I find is the identity level of people that do find bliss, do find successes, their threshold for what they think they need to know before they leap is lower.
That's right.
And the people that struggle, the threshold of what they think they need to know or be prepared or capable of is so high that they never quite meet that threshold to take a leap. That was just a subtle thing
for
me to change.
That is such a great point, because I, you know, there's people in life that whatever they do, they just seem to get the ball in the end zone.
Yes.
Right? And well, you know, were they more prepared? Maybe, but a lot of times they weren't. And then there's people that, and they're good people, but they always need that extra little thing, and and that, you know, they're never quite ready and everything looks good and then it doesn't work out.
Yep.
I do a little test with this stuff on me, and I'm sure you do it on you too, but I do some crazy things, right? Like I was asked years ago, actually it was 2005, so it was many years ago, I was asked to play in this poker tournament. Now, I'd played poker exactly one time in my life, and it was back in college, so it was 20 years before.
Yeah.
And these guys are saying, you know, come on, it's going to be great. There's going to be some World Series of poker players that play in the World Championships that are going to be there. I'm like, guys, I don't even know how to play. Like, I don't even remember anything. They go, oh, yeah, come on. You're going to be fun. So I said, all right, I'll do it. And I said, you got to spend, I told one of the guys, you got to spend 10 minutes with me and just show me the hands, like, and remind me of the rules
what wins,
and things like that.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But I didn't watch and you know, because I'm not, I don't play poker. I haven't played since, but I didn't watch tutorials. I didn't read books.
Yeah.
And I only had like a week to prepare. But here's what I did. Every time, because my identity was, at first, it was like, I'm going to suck at this. I'm going to embarrass myself. I'm going to lose early. And I'm like, no, stop that. Stop. I said, put a new thought process in. Put a new belief system in. And literally, this is crazy, but I told myself over and over again that I made great decisions and I found a way to win. And every time I thought of it, and I didn't, you know, I didn't proactively think of it a lot, but every time I thought about it, oh, that thing's coming up. Yep. I made great decisions, found a way to win. Now, when I said it, though, I was like in a confident state, right? I made sure I matched what I wanted to the emotional state that I wanted to have. And I literally believed that I was going to win the damn thing, right? Yeah. And so I remember I'm getting ready to leave, and my so my wife knew I'd never played before or played once. And she, I said, hey, I'm getting ready to leave, go to that poker tournament. She goes, what time does it start? I said, 6:30. She goes, I'll see you at 7. And so, anyways, I went. I didn't even let that, right? Because you got the naysayers. Yeah. Now, she was just playing with me.
Yep.
We've been married 30 years. You just met her.
Yeah.
But
beautiful
I went.
Couple.
And I just, you know, I had this confidence, like unearned confidence.
Yeah.
Totally unearned confidence. But people are making mistakes, and I win my table, and then I get, you know, finally the championship table. And now I have one guy left. I had like this huge pile of chips and he didn't have as many, but he was like, you know, one of these really good players. And people are saying, oh, you're, this guy's beating you. Does you know how to play? And the guy's getting pissed off. And he goes all in. I go all in. And, you know, I win. And
that's awesome.
My friends are picking me up. And I got this, you know, big, huge trophy and bracelet and all this kind of stuff.
I love it.
And so I come back. It's like 2 a.m. I open the door of the bedroom. My wife's long asleep. Turn the light on. Guess who you're sleeping with tonight?
I love that.
Now that, I'm not saying I could have done that 10 times in a row.
Yep.
But literally, I consciously burned all the boats. I did not allow a thought that was going to lower my confidence in any way. And I did it for about a week, right? So
great.
Yeah, but that's what happens, right? You know, that you and even if I wouldn't have won, I know I would have played a heck of a lot better because I had done that. That's the thing that most people don't get. Well, I didn't win. Well, were you better? Yeah. Okay.
Then
do it.
That's the whole point. By the way, I love that term, unearned confidence. Obviously, the highest form of confidence is something you've earned. But let me tell you something. Unearned confidence is a pretty damn good substitute. And it's a whole lot
when
better.
When you got to go.
And by the way, what most people think, this is what they'd say to themselves, I've earned lack of confidence. And so you think you have to earn this confidence thing all the time. It is absolutely not true, and not enough if you give yourself credit for your intentions either. You don't give yourself enough credit just for your intentions to serve, your intentions to contribute. And it's a huge, huge thing. I love that story because, you know, for me, where's it come from for me often? I had two friends the last week say something. I mean, I have a couple things I'm ill-prepared for. Like, I have no life experience to prepare me for a couple things, kind of like this poker tournament for you. Really good friend of mine, John Gordon, said, and by the way, we've talked a lot about energy today. I'm also a Christian, so I'm both. And John's, and he's a good Christian friend of mine. He goes, Ed, faith over fear. Choose faith over fear. I'm like, it feels good, man.
Yeah.
And then like 3 days later, my next door neighbor at the beach, Jerry, if you're listening to this, thank you for this gift. He's like, hey, man, I've just all my life, I've chosen faith over fear.
Yeah.
And it just, I was like, wow. Now that's that vibrational frequency thing, right? Like all of a sudden both of these messages were being directed to me. For me, that applies to my Christian faith. But for some of you, it might be, I'm going to have faith in the work I've put in. I'm going to have faith that, you know, that everything always works out for me. But sometimes it's just a matter of taking a leap and going, I'm going to choose faith over fear, because what is holding you back is the fear. So I just wanted to share that with everybody.
And one thing on that, Ed, is turn fear into faith, because fear is energy. But use that energy, shift that energy and turn it into faith. I used to sometimes, you know, way back in the past, be a little bit jealous. Hey, how that person, you know, accomplish that or do that? Then I'm like, hey, that's not a good use of energy. And I turn jealousy into prosperity, right? You know, I just, whenever I go, you know, see someone doing well, I'm like, whoa, great. Hey, this is proving that I can do even more too.
That's so good.
And literally just shifting energy into another form.
Man, I've enjoyed today so much. It bums me out that we have to finish. Like I could go two more hours with you. I can feel this. Like just our energy.
Yeah.
Our frequency is so similar. You do help people change, by the way. A couple things I want to say to everyone. They follow you on social media, right? Where do they go to on social? And then I'll tell them about the book again.
Instagram at the Tom McCarthy. Okay. There was already Tom McCarthy, so I had to add the E.
And I like
the not out of ego.
It's emphasis. I like it.
And then I'm on LinkedIn. We're doing quite a few posts on LinkedIn also.
Yeah, by the way, the Breakthrough Code's interesting, guys, because of the way it's written. It's not just like an instruction manual, it's a story. And I love, it just was easier to read. It was more enjoyable to read. And I actually think the way you wrote it, retention's higher of the points that are in the book. And there are three main points in the book, and we've covered two of the three today. I left the third one out so that people need to still go get the book. And so I would just recommend everybody go do that. This is one of these shows I know y'all are going to want to go share. So please do that. Go get Tom's stuff. Go get The Power of One More. And by the way, everybody, I just want to say again, I've got a show coming out August 22nd, depending on when you listen to this, before or after that. It's called Change with Ed Milet. It's a like a Dr. Phil type format, but with me involved, where we change people's lives. And I think if you go watch it, it'll change your life as well. You can get it on Nosy or Samsung TV or Roku or anywhere like that. So please go do that. Please share today's show, everybody. I want to just say God bless you and continue to max out your life.
This is the Ed Milet Show.